On this episode of Video Culture, we'll talk Arnold Schwarzenegger comedies with twins and Kindergarten Cop. Tonight is your night, bro. Tonight is your night, bro.
Did you rewind it?
I don't know.
In a time where everyone has a podcast, in a place where everyone has an opinion, two heroes, Matthew and Ryan, against all odds, are here to save your movie viewing experience from total disaster. Your trip through the video aisles of yesteryear begins now. There will be chills, there will be thrills, and there's a good chance that Ryan will have a coffee spill. They'll discuss the quality, cultural significance, and more detail, frankly, than you bargained for. Here's your host, Ryan Acree and Matthew Essery.
And welcome to another edition of Video Culture. I'm your host, Ryan Acree.
I'm Matthew Essery.
And I apologize now for my voice. I've suffered a cold in the past couple days, but I'm all well, but my voice doesn't sound extremely well.
You sound fine to me, brother.
All right. Well, that's good.
I think we're going to get through this.
I sound good enough. It just don't sound, you know, true and professional as I probably should,
well,
or
I think,
like, normally sound.
I think we can muddle through for talk about these two wacky movies.
It is me, though. Trust me, it is me. So one of the things, the Arnold Schwarzenegger comedies, we had so much fun with, you know, watching Total Recall, and we realized that, hey, you know what? Arnold, like, did all these great, great movies, Conan the Barbarian, Commando.
Yeah, Red Heat, Running Man, Predator.
Well, wait a second.
So many movies.
So let's go through the filmography, if you will, before we actually get to Twins, which is in 1988, okay? So he started his film career really in 1969 with Hercules in New York, played a small part, as he was credited as Arnold Strong or Mr. Universe.
Well, he's the lead character. That's a rough movie. And rough as in, it's not very good.
And we talked about him in being, had an uncredited cameo in The Long Goodbye.
So he is a Video Culture alumnus.
Yeah. And then he was in Stay Hungry and then Pumping Iron, which is really just a documentary.
But it's a great documentary.
The Villain, Scavenger Hunt, The Comeback, Conan the Barbarian, Conan the Destroyer, The Terminator, Red Sonja, Commando, Raw Deal, Predator. You're starting to get the picture, right?
Yeah.
Red Heat, and then Twins.
And if you think about that, even if he had stopped there, he'd still be considered like an upper tier B movie guy.
Right. And just to show you where the rest of them are, he did Twins in 88, Total Recall in 1990, and then he did Kindergarten Cop also in 1990.
Yeah. And at that point, he was exploding, or he was the biggest movie star in the world.
Right, and then he was in 1991, he was in Terminator 2.
Yeah, and at that point, it was Arnold's world, and we were just living in it.
Yeah, I mean, he really, at a certain point, I mean, he was in Commando, but even when I remember, you know, watching Commando, he was just like all the rest of the, you know, the kind of the actors of that genre.
Yeah, he was no different than, say, I don't mean that. I'm not talking bad about any of these guys.
No.
I love them all. But he was like on the level of a Stallone.
Or Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Or a Van Damme or a Lundgren, even.
Right.
And it wasn't until like Terminator 2 and Predator and those movies where he really started to kind of show that he could be something more.
Yeah, when he was in
and
the
bigger.
Yeah, I mean, really, I think when he was in the Terminator, I think James Cameron really used him, you know, a lot of different ways. You know what I mean? And we've talked about even in the last episode that he was almost in RoboCop. You know, so but the costume just didn't look right with him being so big and then this costume sort of around him.
Yes.
So yeah, they had to use kind of a smaller actor, and this went to Peter Weir.
Peter Weller.
Why do I always say Peter Weir?
Because it's a and just again to clarify, Peter Weir is the director of the great Master and Commander.
All right. Sorry, Peter Weir. Sorry, Peter Weller.
Yeah. One day we're gonna get into Peter Weller. He's had some really good movies that no one talks about.
Yeah.
I look forward to one day sneaking in a weird episode about Peter Weller.
All right. So back to Arnold.
Anyway.
All right. Back to Arnold. So, but Twins, I mean, it really started to really sort of open up his personality and his comedy, which we didn't really even know it's there. It's kind of like discovering something else about somebody. Like you know somebody, and then you find out that they play guitar or they write songs or something like that.
This big guy can be funny, and he wasn't a comedy before. The villain, or as it's known overseas as Cactus Jack, it's a comedy western.
Okay,
but he plays the straight guy, and he's like the heroic figure,
right?
As you can imagine, because of the way he looks, he was kind of the good guy, straight man role in it. Where Kirk Douglas was like this Yosemite Sam villain.
Right.
So it was a very silly movie, but Arnold was very straight in it.
Right.
So you didn't get to really see his comedic chops until Twins.
So Twins, starring Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito as his twin brother, right?
Which, what a great creative idea.
Yeah, it's like this genetic experiment where, you know, they're trying to create this super, you know, human, but then there were twins born, and then all of the rest of the leftover, you know, goes into another person.
Another embryo, basically.
Right, goes into Danny DeVito's character, Vincent.
He has a great line in the movie where he goes, I'm a side effect?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of weird. That whole premise of the whole... That whole part of the movie was a bit strange to me.
It's pretty light science fiction.
Right. Well, I mean, it never really explained what the purpose of creating this was.
For science. Some reason they made dinosaurs in Jurassic Park.
Right.
They just wanted to know if they could do it.
Yeah, like it was a government project, but for what? What was the end game?
They need to go, Jeff Goldblum, to be there like, you were so busy preoccupied with if you could. You never stopped to thought, you can think if you should.
Yeah. All right. I didn't really understand. I mean, it was almost if you know, Vincent, the, you know, Danny DeVito's character was born. And then I know when they say we didn't expect him. And then when he was born, they shut down the whole program.
And they threw him in an orphanage, which was really weird. Like why not try to make his life decent and okay?
Right.
Now we're just going to basically chuck him in the bin and take the good kid to a tropical island. And it's just such a weird, kind of awful premise if you think about it. And I don't mean awful like bad quality. I mean inhumane.
Well, and if they were doing this experiment, wouldn't they think what would really happen to them? Let's study what they do. Let's study their genetic makeup and let's see what actually happens, right? You know?
Yeah, we wouldn't just ignore a major side effect like another baby being born.
Yeah. But anyway, that doesn't go along with the premise of the movie, right? Which is...
Yeah.
Which is Julius, who's kind of like this green, you know, fresh off the island, kind of, you know, fish out of water story, finding his way through modern America.
Yeah, like he's raised on an island and in basically seclusion, where he's basically taught to be the perfect human being through like books and physical exercise.
Mm-hmm.
Your typical sheltered like superior figure.
Well, I just think in the 80s there was a lot of these movies that were like this, where kind of like Star Trek IV. We're kind of studying or exploring the absurdity of modern life, kind of.
Yeah. You know, one of the best examples of that is Crocodile Dundee.
Yeah, Crocodile Dundee is another great example.
Yeah, basically a foreign figure comes into urban sprawl in America, and it's like, what the heck's going on? Yeah. You know?
It's like, what are, you know, what's cappuccino? Like, why do we have to have bidets? Like, what is microwave food?
Yeah,
what is all this weirdness?
One of the better parts of Twins is when Julian comes, who's Arnold Schwarzenegger's character, comes to America at first, and he's wandering around the streets, just looking at things, kind of just amused by them. Look at this weird thing, this billboard, this you know, this weird lingerie shop, or these guys doing three card Monty.
Yep.
And he's just kind of amused by it all. Right. You know, he's not afraid of anything because he's gigantic. So he's just kind of impressed by it all, but a little bit tickled.
Yeah, he's never heard, you know, don't yakety yak, don't talk back. You know, it's he's just by headphones and by music and by all these different modern things like movies and. Yeah.
He sees a poster for Rambo 2 and laughs at it.
Yeah.
Which is a nice little joke between his rivalry with Stallone.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. I thought that was a nice little.
So we're hot now?
We are rolling. Okay. We had a little computer glitch where we lost about 10 minutes of conversation. We were just talking and talking and talking and then nothing.
Yeah.
But it happens sometimes, you
it
know?
It does. I mean, we've done a lot of episodes. This is our first snafu like that. So
I mean, hey, we're in IT. We know stuff breaks.
We are. And so we're gonna try to recap what we talked about. If we repeat anything we said before, we apologize. We didn't listen to all the previous recordings, so bear with us, and thanks for your patience.
Yeah, so Ivan Reitman, you know, directed this film, which he was very, you know, sort of sought after, you know, after Ghostbusters. You know, doing that sort of comedy, you know, the family comedy that was very accessible, you know. That was his thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And so this came out the year after Ghostbusters 2.
Yeah.
Which we know, I'm thinking of Kindergarten Cop.
Yeah.
So this came out before Ghostbusters 2. But we're talking about a little bit about the plot. My big problem with Twins is that it's a little overly plotted.
Yeah.
I mean, what's best about the movie is really the light hangout stuff.
Right, because the whole, what we talk about, like the MacGuffin part of that, what keeps the story going is that they're trying to find out about their mother, but there's also this subplot of this car and like the engine that's in the back of it.
Like an experimental plane thing. Yeah. And it was supposed to be driven to this like billionaire by a hitman.
The billionaire's name is Beetroot McKinley.
That's an amazing name. That's up there with Noodles McIntosh in the pantheon of great like video culture names.
I think that's one of the top names for me, Beetroot McKinley.
That's a great name. That's a great alias if I ever heard one.
Yeah, it's played by actor Trey Wilson, who's actually no longer with us. But he was in Raising Arizona and Bull Durham.
He played the father of the quadruplets in Raising Arizona.
Yeah.
I don't know what his jammy said on him. Yoda's in shit.
Yeah, unpainted Huff Hines. But my favorite line is like a bunch of lollygaggers out there from Bull Durham.
Yeah, so he's so good, man.
But yeah, unfortunately, he died in like 1989 at like 40 years old.
Which I didn't know, and that's so sad. Because, you know, we grew up watching these movies over and over again. Bull Durham, Twins, Raising Arizona, all the things he did. You never stop and think, well, I never saw him in anything past that time because it's just those movies are staples of us growing up. So he was just there in our childhoods.
Yeah.
And it's weird to think that he died so young.
And that's, he touched our lives and then we never get to see them again and wonder where they are. We don't get to see them on TV shows or anything else. Yeah.
And it just never occurs to you until you start doing a deep dive like this.
Yeah.
And, what makes Twins best are the character moments. It's of, like, whenever there's gunfights or fistfights, I just didn't find myself caring. Like, I actually mentioned this to you before when I watched it last week. I said to you, when's the last time you watched Twins? Because I did not remember any of the storyline of, like, hitmen and, like, experimental jet engines. I'm like, what the heck is this?
Yeah, no, I remembered, when he stole a car and, like, you know, like Arnold having to lift up the car and then, you know, the guy that plays Mr. Webster, you know, he has to, I got my driving gloves, I got my driving hat, and I got no car, you know, like, but that whole subplot, really doesn't make any sense and really just convolutes the plot. I think the only reason that it's there is to transform the Vincent character because he's so, you know, he has to make that final choice at the end. Is he going to return the money? Or is he going to, you know, do for himself?
To be a scumbag. Yeah. But to me, really what makes the movie work, the best parts of the movie are really just Arnold and DeVito palling around together.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I think that is what makes the movie and makes the movie so great is all of those little moments that they have together.
Yeah. Like, tonight is your night, bro.
Yeah.
Yeah, that scene where he's kind of prepping him to have sex for the first time with a girl he likes.
Yeah, and then they have to practice dancing together.
Yeah, when they dance together.
Or like when they're in the supermarket or the gas station, he has to buy a t-shirt and he's born to be bad, you know.
Oh, he's like, Jules, you're so bulgy. Do you get stung by a bee? Because he's he's so muscular.
Yeah, the back is worse than the front. Yeah. You know?
it's endearing. It's a little silly, but it's not goofy. I use for a lot, but it's charming and I like seeing them hang out together and have fun.
Yeah,
it doesn't need a lot of plot for that to be enjoyable.
No, all those scenes that they have together where they're like mimicking and miming each other, like in that weird sort of twin, you know, sort of way.
Yeah.
Like when they're eating, you know, the food. But yeah, like just discovering, and I think I mentioned this before, but like, you know, like microwave food, but like that whole thing that they have together, all those like little scenes, even the bathroom scene.
Where they flush the toilets the same way and wash their hands the same way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, but even those like moments that they share together, that's what I think like really makes the movie. And you can tell they had a really great chemistry together.
They're earnest and heartwarming.
Yeah.
And to me, that's like for I know especially for me, that's what I remember from the movie. And I had seen the movie a bunch growing up.
Right.
And that's the only stuff that stuck with me. Like I said, I did not remember any of the actual like plot outside of them hanging out together.
Right, 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 right. We are still recording. I'm glancing.
Now we're nervous. Now we're like doing long like the Sergei Leone, like eyes going back and forth.
Yeah, like are we? No, we're still recording. Yeah. No, but I think that what makes the movie endearing. The violent scene. You know, just because we have Arnold, like we got to have a violent scene. I think was really sort of almost gratuitous. Like I could have just dealt with the scene where they're in the lobby. And he's like, you know, you mess with me, you mess with my whole family.
That's all you
like,
needed because, I mean, we know Arnold's cut out of granite at this point. He's like 9 feet tall.
Right.
Built like Superman. You don't need to keep illustrating that he's a badass.
Mm-hmm.
It's obvious he's a badass.
I mean, I seriously thought the scenes in the bar scene where he's fighting the other guys, I thought that was like really almost like Three Stooges, you know,
it's
really
weirdly slapsticky, and it's not needed.
Mm-mm.
But before we lost the recording, you mentioned a neat bit of trivia. I want you to repeat.
Oh yeah, I will repeat that. I will repeat that the and speaking of the bar scene, that Jeff Beck is the actual guitarist.
What? Yeah, Jeff Beck. Which I thought it looked like Jeff Beck at the time, but I was like, nah, probably not. And I just didn't watch the credits.
It is. Nicolette Larson plays the singer, but I guess he's Jeff Beck is a guitarist. And Terry Bozzio is the drummer, which I've actually met Terry Bozzio.
Well, and for our listeners at home who aren't necessarily music nerds like you and myself, explain who that is.
So Terry Bozzio, he's played in several different bands. You can look him up. And he is a world-renowned drummer, played on many recordings, and he put on a drum clinic, you know, in Knoxville, like the mid-90s. And so I was just like, hey, this is cool. And so I went, and everybody got to meet him. I mean, there was a small crowd of probably about, you know, 30 or 40 of us there at the, you know, music store or whatever. And so we all got to meet him and shake his hand. It was kind of neat.
Yeah, so long story short, you met someone who was in Twins.
I did.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's pretty neat. I didn't even know that. I mean, I didn't even know that he was in, you know, by that time, you know, he was already in the movie because it was like probably 93-ish.
Yeah, no, you had so many questions for him.
I mean, like, hey, what's Arnold really like? You know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
It was still really fun.
Yeah, so I like Twins. It was interesting to go back and revisit it but I didn't like it as much as I thought I would.
All
right. Because, again, I thought that the subplot of the criminal activity really detracts from what's fun about the movie.
Yeah, I really like the ending and how, like, you know, you have, like, the where you know that, like, they stole where Vincent or Jules actually gets the $1 million, right?
Gets $5 million.
Right. And then
and Julius Arnold is like, Vincent, you've got to return it. And he's like, oh, I returned all $4 million.
Right, yeah.
And it repeats a couple times. And unless you're paying attention, you wouldn't notice that that's $1 million less than what he actually had.
Yeah, because I think he says it so many times when he's like, $5 million, $5 million.
Yeah. Because if you're not paying attention, you would miss the gag there, that he actually did keep just $1 million
of it. Well, it's kind of that same sort of gag in, like, Dragnet, where he's, you know, at the end, where he's like, oh, you mean the Virgin Conniswale? And, you know, like, gives him a look. Yeah.
And if you're wondering what Ryan's talking about, listen to our Dragnet episode in our archives at video-culture.com.
Yeah.
Plug.
No, but my point about that final scene, you know, with the mom is very endearing. Really ties up the movie, I think. Yeah. It's very, very nice.
Well, that's what's best about the movie is like the heartwarming stuff. And that's what you take away from it.
Yeah. So hopefully now we captured what we lost. Hopefully we can move on.
So.
All right. I think we got it all. Fingers crossed
for those who can't see me at home.
All right. So now we're going to move on to Kindergarten Cop. Kindergarten Cop was made in 1990. It was actually delayed a year for the release because of Ivan Reitman was working on Ghostbusters 2.
Which I sort of kind of mentioned earlier because I got turned around about what we were talking about. But yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, delayed for Ghostbusters 2. Delayed for almost a year, right?
Yeah, because they wanted to release Ghostbusters 2 around Christmas of 89, but they had Kindergarten Cop, which, you know, they wanted to release at Christmas time too, so they delayed it about a year, Universal did, you know, because they don't want too many, you know, movies at one time. But I'll talk about that. That might not have been the best decision. We'll talk about that after, you know, at the end.
So the plot for Kindergarten Cop, I think, is stronger than Twins.
Yeah, where you actually have Arnold Schwarzenegger plays Detective John Kimball. He's like an L.A. detective trying to capture this guy, Crisp, because you hear the names like over and over and over again. He's trying to capture Cullen Crisp. And so they're looking for his ex-wife, who's basically like abandoned him and living in this, you know, they want her to testify against him.
Yes.
And so, cause he's like this drug dealer, you know, whatever, big drug dealer around town. So, but she goes off to the small town in Oregon, with like their 6-year-old son. So that's all that they know about her. They know that she's in the city. They know that there's a 6-year-old, and the 6-year-old has to go to, you know, one of the kindergarten classes. So they have Pamela Reed plays Detective Phoebe O'Hara, and she's supposed to be the kindergarten.
And she's adorable in this movie, by the way. Super cute.
Yeah, super cute. So they're supposed to go undercover, but then she gets food poisoning.
Yes.
Yeah. So then the whole idea is like, you know, just like a typical man, like, I'll go in and I can be a, you know, kindergarten teacher. It's not that hard, you know.
So you got like this typical like action movie character, you know, big burly man trying to corral a bunch of kindergartners.
Yeah.
You know, comedy gold.
Yeah, comedy gold. And then they get to climb all over him and all that stuff.
Again, it goes back to the kind of the dichotomy of Twins where, you know, Twins, you know, it's almost to the concept of how absurd is it to see little Danny DeVito next to big Arnold Schwarzenegger. Now you get Arnold trying to buy lots of tiny little children, and just that base image is comical. Mm.
Right. Well, because they show John Kimball, like, you know, trying to get to the other, you know, witness, and he's like, you know, blowing people by, and he's like shooting shotguns at people.
It's a very stereotypical Arnold thing.
Handcuffing people to dead people, you know. He's just like the plays the bad cop. Yeah. You know what I mean?
It feels like Red Heat 2 or Raw Deal 2, you know what I mean?
He's just like a cop on the edge. Yeah, just a badass. You know what I mean? Yeah. And then here he has to go in and deal with kids, but he can't do, you know, the same sort of things that he normally does. So he just doesn't know how to.
Like the minute he raises his voice, they all start crying.
Yeah, no. And any parent who's, you know, done this, like, knows exactly, you know, what that is. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, you have to learn how to modulate.
Been, right. We've all been there, you know? I thought that was great.
But weirdly, the secret weapon of this movie, really, the kids are hysterical.
Oh, yeah.
You get so many little funny bits, man. There's so many, like, it's such a little, like, clip-worthy movie, because you can clip out so many things of these kids, and they're hysterical.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and, like, you
well,
know.
I mean, it's almost like that show, Kids Say the Darndest Things, or whatever, yeah.
And I doubt a lot of their dialogue was scripted. I bet you they just let them talk.
Yeah. I'm sure they did, and then like just but I mean, you gotta love Arnold. Let's play a game. Who is your daddy, and what does he do?
Yes,
you
know? The scene that launched 1,000 memes. Yeah,
and soundboards.
Soundboards.
I mean, lots of soundboards from Kindergarten Cop from this movie. Yeah. I mean,
Mr. Kimball, you idiot.
Yeah. It's not the Duma.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's absolutely, you know, him trying to level with these kindergarten children. And I love, though, how he talked to them like that they were adults. He didn't talk to them like they were children, which
I
thought was...
One thing that really struck me about it, watching it as now an adult who watches movies critically now and really thinks about movies, Arnold puts in a great performance here. He gets to be an action movie hero in parts. He gets to be comedic in parts. But he gets to be dramatic, too, and a romantic lead. He gets to show a lot of range, and he does really well at all of it, I think.
Yeah.
You know, Arnold's often bagged on for not being a great actor, but I disagree. I think he does really well with everything he's handed in this movie. And Kindergarten Cop asks him to do a whole lot. Like, he has to have emotional scenes talking about his failed marriage. He has to have romantic scenes where he falls in love with the witness. He has to have comedy scenes with these children.
Right.
Children are hard to act with.
He has to run to the, you know, the principal with his tail tucked between his legs because he punched a parent. You know what I mean? So
he has to show remorse. And he shows a lot of range, and he knocks it out of the park. He's really good in it.
Yeah, he is really, really good. So Penelope Ann Miller plays and I thought she did a really great job. She was also in The Freshman, Carlito's Way, Adventures in Babysitting, Biloxi Blues, Awakenings, Chaplin.
Yeah.
And
it's a little bit of a mystery, like about who the wife of the criminal is, where she is, and right. there's a few red herrings in the film.
Right.
Again, spoiler alert, you find out it is her. Right. She's also a teacher at the school. She teaches like sixth grade or something like that. And she becomes Arnold's love interest.
Right.
You know, and it's, to me, the way this movie worked, the plot's much simpler than Twins.
Yeah.
And it allows Arnold to have those action hero moments much more organically than Twins does.
Yeah, I think that the biggest problem that I have with it is, you know, the violence at the end was just, I think, a little too much.
Yes.
Especially when you consider that, you know, it's still supposed to be like a kid's movie. It was released, in Christmas time. And the final scene is like this shoot. I mean, Arnold gets shot. You know what I mean? Like, John Kimball, you know, gets actually shot. I mean, he gets, and then they have to, like, they arrest the other lady. But then the other dude, Crisp gets shot and killed.
He gets killed, And even the beginning is very much like a regular Arnold movie. So it's like two movies kind of stitched together, you know?
Right.
And I remember at the time, I actually remember this, there was actually a little bit of a controversy because the young actors in the movie couldn't go to the premiere because the movie's not kid appropriate.
Right. Yeah, it's PG-13.
So there were actually some entertainment news stories at the time about how these kids who were in this big movie with Arnold couldn't actually watch the movie they were in, even though they were the focus of it.
Yeah, because they were 6 and 7 years old at the time. Yeah. And then, they couldn't even go watch their own movie that they were in, you know, that they...
Yeah,
that
even the idea of the tone shift. I mean, there's stuff in there that's not appropriate for children.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, it is. Yeah, because, I mean, it starts off like an action movie, and in the middle is the kindergarten part, you know?
Yeah, it's almost like it goes from being almost an R-rated movie to like a PG movie back to an R-rated movie.
Yeah.
Like, it's not quite that violent or quite that kiddie.
Right.
But it definitely has that spectrum to it, you know?
Yeah.
So it's definitely a weird duck of a film. I still like it, but it's definitely an oddity.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see what that is. I mean, I thoroughly enjoy... I mean, I thought that the scenes, you know, with the kids were great, and I thought that, you know, the way Arnold reacted to the kids was exactly, you know, the way his character would react. Yeah. But I just think that, you know, once again, I think that he's, you know, surrounded by another great cast. I mean, even playing the principal is, you know, Linda Hunt plays Miss Slowski. I mean, it's exactly who you would picture as, like, so the again, principal goes, of a, you know.
It goes back to Salisbury. She's a tiny little older woman. Yeah. And so much of this is based on visual cues, and she's so internally strong, and such a little badass that she actually makes Arnold intimidated, and that's fun,
right?
But Arnold was always very smart; that he always surrounded himself with great casts. So you can look at any movie he was in through his golden period, and he is surrounded by great actors.
Well, we also mentioned the other co-star that he was with, Pamela Reed, who plays the other detective. I mean, she was in The Right Stuff, The Best of Times, Cadillac Man, Junior.
Yeah, and then a ton of TV shows.
Yeah.
She did a ton of TV. Yeah. And she's super charming. I mean, I could have watched a buddy cop movie just about them, like a kind of a 48 Hours kind of movie just about her and Arnold teaming up fighting bad guys.
Right, and they had such great chemistry. Like, when she stepped in and was like, oh, I'm his sister, you know, and like had a German accent.
And was doing like the accent, And it's again, it goes back to, it's fun. It's not necessarily laugh out loud funny, but you're enjoying yourself. You're smiling. Right. It's an enjoyable film to watch. It's a great way to spend an afternoon, you know?
Right. And everybody, all the characters kind of have their quirks. Like, she eats a lot. Like, her fiance is like kind of clumsy. I mean, it all like really sort of like really works together.
Yeah. It's broad. Again, much like Twins, it's broad without being silly.
Yeah, it's true.
It makes it kind of light and enjoyable.
Yeah.
And so, but you're right, but when it gets into like the shoot parts of the movie, it's a little bit of a tonal whiplash, because you're like, oh, now he's killing people, you know?
But I think both of these movies, I mean, really lend itself to all of those like quick one-liners and stuff like that from Arnold. And I think this movie, even more so, I think lend itself to some of those things. You know, I think that's why they work so well on those soundboards. You know what I mean?
I mean, it's had a pretty big cultural impact when it comes to the internet, if you think about it. This is probably the first movie that really got memed a lot.
Right.
Before memes were even, people really knew what memes were.
Right. And you can walk up to anybody on the street and go, it's not the Tuma.
And they're going to know what you're talking
about. They're going to know exactly the scene. They're going to know from exactly the movie and the actor.
Even if they've never seen it, they've seen a clip or they've heard a sound clip or someone's told them about it.
Yeah.
That is cultural relevance.
Yeah.
And that's kind of amazing.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's made its way into, you know, Family Guy or something like that. You know,
it's way into everything.
Yeah.
Everyone's again. It says something weird, but the majority of people in America, in the West, are gonna know what that line is, what it's a reference to, even if they've never seen the movie. And that's truly a testament to how much cultural.
Well, I think stuff that, it claimed. I mean, really, if you think about it, most of the Arnold lines that people say, you know, like probably come from this movie or come from Twins, right? Yes. That are funny Arnold lines when they're trying to do an Arnold voice, you know? The only other line that I can think of is people say, get in the choppa.
Or I'll be back.
I'll be back or get in the choppa, right? But well, it's not, and I want to correct people, it's not get in the chopper, it's get to the chopper. Get to the choppa.
I know.
You know that.
Yeah. But you're right. The thing about that, out of Arnold's entire iconic career, you're like, it's like four lines that everyone knows. But Twins, Twins
hasta
la vista, one of them.
I'll be back. Hasta la vista. You know, not a tumor.
Let's see. Who
is your daddy and what does he do?
Yes. Yeah.
You know, tonight is your night, bro, is Danny DeVito's line. Yeah.
And that's not nearly had as much cultural seepage as, you know, it's not a tumor.
Right.
But yeah, it's up there with I'll be back. And
I'll
be back, that's like a legendary line.
Yeah.
And that little joke in Twins is at that level. That's astounding for a little movie like this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just to show you never know what's going to take hold of the popular consciousness and last.
Yeah.
You really can't tell.
No, but I think that, you know, for his career, I don't know if it's like whether Arnold was like, I really want to do this so I'll make more money, you know, kind of thing, or I want to be known. But I think that, you know, he wanted to break out of that typecast of being this commando kind of character and show more range. And I think that both of these films do that quite a lot.
And after these, he got to be shown more range in his action films.
Yeah.
He got to be more of a three-dimensional character in the action films he made after these because of these roles. You're right.
Yeah, I mean, even the role that he did in the middle, which is, you know, T2, you know, that he did, you know.
Yeah, which was, he got to have funny moments. He got to have warm moments, and people believed them.
Right.
Because they saw the range he had.
Right.
Well,
I mean, that's how, I mean, Total Recall is the one that he did, you know, kind of in between.
Yeah.
That was the one that he did in between. And, yeah, it's because of that that he gets to do stuff like Total Recall. I mean, that was what his sort of purpose. And even though, you know, I think that even so, they're still great comedies. And they were still, I mean, audiences did respond. Twins debuted at number one. Okay?
These movies made money.
They made money. It debuted at number one. I mean, and that's huge. So let's get into the facts, shall we? Okay. So, Twins, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Danny DeVito, and Hulk Hogan have all revealed that Schwarzenegger and DeVito were given the option of doing the movie or doing this other movie called Suburban Commando. Now, had the two chosen Suburban Commando, Hogan and, it would have been like Christopher Lloyd. And they did actually make this movie. So,
Suburban Commando, I've seen
Hulk Hogan and Christopher Lloyd did actually do Suburban Commando. Yeah.
So that they were almost in Twins?
Yes. No. They had the option of doing the Twins script or doing Suburban Commando.
And when they passed,
they said, we're going to do Twins. And so, therefore, Hulk Hogan went for Suburban Commando with Christopher Lloyd. Now, if you don't know about Suburban Commando, it was released in 1991, and it is described as an interstellar hero from a distant world visits Earth and tries to fit in with a mundane yet kind suburban family.
Yeah. It's a terrible movie.
Yeah.
I've seen it. It's I could see how you can make a good movie out of that concept with someone like Arnold and DeVito in it. But yeah. The movie that exists, the Christopher Lloyd Hulk Hogan movie, it's some garbage.
Right. Well, let's just say those guys, you know, made good choices. Yeah. I mean, that's why that they're the stars that they are.
That's why they're mega stars. Yeah.
Because I think to be a mega star, you have to make good choices like that.
Yes, you do.
You have to know, you know, what's good for you and your character, you know,
all that brand. Yeah, right. For sure.
Universal needed to know if Arnold Schwarzenegger, Danny DeVito, and Ivan Reitman were committed very early on because they were under a deadline. They made a deal on a napkin at lunch with agents. They signed it, and DeVito has it framed.
Nice.
Yeah, because it was like, are you in? Are you in? Because that's a big thing in Hollywood, is whether somebody is really inked in on the deal. They may be considered, but you're not considered, or if you're considering a role or consider, it's not, you know, it's not a done deal unless you've signed. You know,
things fall apart all the time in Hollywood.
Right.
I mean, last year I was covering a lot of entertainment news, and things would fall apart constantly.
Well, and some of those early signings would be like, well, if this person's not involved, then I'm out. You know, like if you're not going to have this director, then I'm not in it. You know what I mean? They have all these clauses, you know? So sometimes even like a pre-signing, you know, sort of contract or affidavit or something like that, like... So, yeah, so they got all three of them on board, got them locked in on a napkin. So,
can you imagine how much that must be worth?
The money was not available to pay the two main stars, so the director of their normal fees. So they decided to split a percentage of the gross profits between the three of them. Okay, that's a very common thing to do with stars, because it's kind of like, okay, we're attaching this big name, but we can't really give you all the money up front. So if it makes a lot of money, then you'll make a lot of money.
Arnold was the king of this.
So Arnold Schwarzenegger got 20% of the profits, and he made $35 million through international sales, video, DVD, and TV screenings. And he earned more money from Twins than any other of the Terminator series. Because in the Terminator, you know, James Cameron owns all that stuff. Yes. So he's a hired gun to come in and act and do whatever. Yeah. So he made more because he's basically like, you're getting part of the producer profits, basically, right?
Yeah. Arnold definitely is like the king of the back end profits. He did that on a lot of movies like Batman and Robin. He got that on Batman and Robin.
Right.
Made crazy bank. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's the way to do it. I mean, I think that's a way a lot of, you know, music deals are made. I don't know why that hasn't translated that much to acting, but anyway. Arnold Schwarzenegger really did lift up the back of the car himself.
Wow. That's impressive. Because it looks like an effect.
No, it is he lifted up the Cadillac himself.
I thought he was playing the act of straining very realistically.
Yeah, I think they had to do it like really... They had to do it with two cameras, and one was on the ground and one was on the top. I think they had to block it like really, because he probably couldn't do it like all day. He probably only lifted it maybe once or twice. But yeah, that's all Arnold, man.
He was something at that period of time, man. He was at the height of his athletic, you know, power at that point.
The bridge that Vincent drives along that you see in the beautiful shots in the montage is at the Rio Grande Gorge Bridge near Taos, Taos, New Mexico. So, yeah, it's a very pretty gorge, very pretty bridge. Just thought I would mention that. Because I really don't have a whole lot of facts on this movie.
Yeah, I mean, I think at this time, there wasn't a lot of, you know, behind-the-scenes stuff documented. Because they didn't really think anyone would care about the behind-the-scenes process.
I mean, it's just kind of a goofy comedy, you know what I mean? Ivan Reitman directing, you know, that sort of thing. I mean, I think Ivan Reitman's like kids are in the movie somewhere thinking, you know, but anyway, the budget was, for Twins was $18 million, and at the box office made $216.6 million.
That's a spicy meatball right there.
I'm telling you, it debuted at number one, at opening weekend, it made $11 million. So, I mean, it almost made back, you know, it's. You know, budget.
That's like huge in late 80s, money.
Right, in one opening weekend.
Yeah.
It opened against, in December 9th of 1989, it opened against My Stepmother is an Alien and Mississippi Burning.
That's why I did so well. My Stepmother to an Alien is terrible, and Mississippi Burning is good, but that is a depressing movie.
Right. Well, those were the two new movies. Yeah. I mean, there were still other movies that were still in the theaters, including The Naked Gun from the Files of Police Squad, Scrooged, Tequila Sunrise, Oliver and Company, The Land Before Time, Ernest Saves Christmas, Child's Play, Cocoon the Return, The Accused, and Iron Eagle Part 2. Now, if I saw any of these movies on the marquee and I hadn't seen them all, and I'm like, what movie am I going to go see? I'm going to go see Twins.
Yeah, because Arnold, man, he was the draw. I mean, everyone loved Arnold.
I mean, I think I really did see My Stepmother is an Alien at the Dollar Movie Theater.
I'm pretty sure I saw like half those in the theater, yeah.
Well, I saw it at the Dollar Movie Theater like months later, you know what I mean? I saw Scrooge probably on video.
I saw Scrooge in the theater, I believe.
Okay. Not into the Land Before Time or Cocoon?
I saw The Land Before Time in the theater.
Oh, you did?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, I was a kid. Of course I did.
Yeah. I probably saw Iron Eagle 2 on like HBO or Showtime.
Yeah. I'm sure I know I watched it on HBO a lot, yeah.
All right. So Roger Ebert, he gave Twins 3 stars. I mean, and that's pretty high praise for a comedy like this.
Which is, and I guess back to one thing I always like to mention about Roger Ebert, he was not a stuffy critic.
Yeah.
He liked mainstream entertainment quite a bit. Like a lot of other critics savaged this movie.
Yeah.
Ebert was like, nah, it's fun, you know?
Yeah.
It's a trifle, but it's cool.
Right.
You know, of course he was more elegant than that.
Well,
but,
because it's like, some critics are like, well, if it's not Oscar worthy, it's not worth writing about. You know what I mean? But Roger Ebert, he was the common man sort of like entertainment. I mean, he knew, you know, good movies and he appreciated like the Oscar type movies, but he also appreciated regular entertainment as well.
That's why he's kind of our patron saint here on the show.
Right. But he says Twins is not a great comedy. He says it's not up there with Reitman's Ghostbusters. He says Arnold given comedy from beginning to end, he handles it with ease. And DeVito is not as funny as he was in Ruthless People and Wise Guys, but it is an engaging and entertainment with some big laughs and sort of warm goofiness.
Very true. Very well stated.
Yeah. I mean, that's basically...
I forgot about Wise Guys, too, by the way.
Oh, yeah. That's true. We need to watch that one. Rotten Tomatoes, also not so hot on this movie. 44% of critics.
That's surprising in a way. I mean, I at least thought it'd be at least a 50 or maybe a 60.
The surprising thing for me was the 39% of the audience score.
Yeah, I actually saw that one. I caught that one in passing this week, and that blows my mind.
I just don't understand it a bit. I don't understand why that would garner such a low score.
Yeah. I can't be bothered to read user reviews. I mean, life's too short to read what randos think on the internet. But yeah, it definitely surprised me.
I just think that maybe their expectations for Arnold movie or comedy are like much different than ours, I guess.
Well, maybe because Danny DeVito's really cultivated a whole new audience in recent times. He's in that show Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Yeah. He's hugely popular now amongst like hipster guys and alternative comedy people.
Yeah, but his character is like completely a foul talking, you know, foul mouthed, you know, wise guy, you know, and he's completely different sort of softy, you know, he's kind of like a bad guy gone good in this movie, I guess.
It's probably too like earnest and like big hearted for people.
Yeah.
Cause it's very much a wears a heart on its sleeve kind of movie.
Oh, for sure. For sure. In March of 2012, Universal announced the development of a sequel titled Triplets with Eddie Murphy as their long-lost brother.
Which still hasn't happened. That's been in development for a long time.
I mean, I think one of the things that the quotes that I read was, Arnold said that, you know, Eddie Murphy, as late as 2018, Arnold said that, you know, that Eddie Murphy was on board.
Yeah.
I mean, I just don't see how this could really happen. I mean, it's like, oh, wait, we have another brother? They've already explained the story. And, like, how are you going to explain another brother?
Yeah, and at this point, I mean, now they're all still around, so they could. And Eddie's having a bit of a comeback.
Right.
He's about to be in a movie that's about to come out called, that's based on the guy who made Dolomite, Rudy Ray Moore. He's getting great reviews on that. Not to date this podcast, because by the time this comes out, The movie will be out. People have seen it. But right now, it's still getting reviewed by critics.
Right.
He's making Coming to America 2.
Right.
So Eddie's coming back. Yeah. So it could still happen.
I mean, coming back, meaning he's doing, like, you know, rated R movies or PG-13.
He's doing movies people want to see again.
Yeah, not like, yeah. So
you never know, but it's been like developed for so long that I'll be shocked if it ever happens.
Yeah, I would be too. I mean, I just don't see how that storyline kind of plays out, and I just don't see it kind of
maybe
happening.
15 years ago. If it had been 15 years ago, I could see it happening, but
yeah,
it's too late. I think that time has passed.
Right.
It is not their night, bro, anymore.
I kind of agree. All right, so Kindergarten Cop. You'd be surprised to find out that Bill Murray and Patrick Swayze were approached to play the role of John Kimble.
Bill Murray would have been interesting.
Yeah, that would have been, like, really weird. Like, I guess because of Ivan Reitman and, like, him kind of playing this, like, you know... But he would have been more of a wise guy, not this like hard cop, you know, have to play a.
Yeah, he would have been snarky and smirking through the entire thing.
Yeah, it would have been a completely different kind of script, I think.
And Swayze, to me, with Swayze, it would have been a completely different vibe because he's such a romantic leading man. It would have given the whole movie a different vibe. It would have had more of that kind of dime store romance novel quality to it, I think, with Swayze in the
you just can't see
role.
Swayze with a real sort of anger side. You know what I mean?
Not really.
Like really. I mean, like a badass. His badass side, like in Roadhouse, was kind of like, okay, he's kind of like, you know, he plays Dalton. He's like, you know, he's going to be the bouncer guy to get rid of, you know. He's always playing like the kind of the good guy. I really can't see him playing like a bad cop kind of role.
I can't see him with a shotgun or yelling at kids.
Yeah.
You know, I can't see it.
Yeah. Or like punching a dad for like, hitting a kid or like whatever.
Yeah.
So I think Patrick Swayze turned down the role. So it's not like they were like, oh, well, you know, whatever.
Yeah. It's odd for Arnold to be anyone's second choice.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, I think that, you know, once again, like Universal, like, you know, like Ivan Reitman, you know, and I'll get to that in a second, but. Just real quick, exterior scenes were shot at Jacob Astoria Elementary School in Astoria, Oregon. So
the only thing that looks like Oregon is Oregon, really. Oregon's one of those very unique kind of landscapes.
Right. Like, but it wasn't like some of the interior shots of the classroom and stuff were like sets, and some of the other places were like sets in LA, like the mall and stuff like that. But the actual, you know, the actual exterior shots were all like real. Universal paid for local artists to paint murals, provided playground equipment, a fenced playground, and a new lawn and hedges around the school. The school is actually just a few blocks away from the Goonies house.
Neat.
Yeah. So the motel that John and Phoebe stayed at is also a real location, the Bayview Motel. So it's a real location. I mean, so it's like that's the kind of thing that you shoot on a budget. You know, when you kind of shoot, you shoot in local and – you know, you don't have to change the name. I mean, who really cares? Like, you know, what the name of the motel is.
So, you wouldn't have to alter it too much.
Schwarzenegger's contract stipulated that a private studio for daily workouts and weightlifting be provided for the actor and his personal staff. Because, you know, by this time, I mean, he's a big deal. You know, he's got $30 million. You know, he made $30 million from Twins.
Yeah, he's a rich man at this point. Yeah.
So he could weightlift and a suitable studio was located. But when an agreement couldn't be reached, the actor threatened to pull out of the production. So an Astoria business owner stepped in and donated an unused commercial space. And, you know, and therefore they can continue to shoot.
That's having power.
Yeah.
He's like, I want to work out with my buddies. Make that happen.
Well, you know, I mean, he needed space for his, like, big weights and all this kind of stuff to, like, work out. And I have to work out, you know,
he's a giant man. He needed a giant space. Yeah.
But Schwarzenegger also demanded Ivan Reitman to direct and for physical fitness themes as well as child abuse and family life written into the script.
And that's some of the most poignant stuff in it, really. It's touching.
Yeah,
the stuff where he defends one of his students is abused, and he defends the boy, and they show him working with the kids trying to help them get physically fit, and it's all very sweet and charming. So Arnold's instincts to me were really good in that respect. It makes you like his character even more.
Right. Yeah, like he's reaching out to the kid who's not participating and whatnot, and to try to draw him in to, you know, to the group. And I honestly thought that, like, oh wait, are we actually getting into, like, were the kids, like, kind of autistic or something like that? But then you learn later it's because, you know, he has, like, bruises and because, you know.
Yeah. And then, of course, Arnold punches the abusive father and is to be a hero.
Yeah.
And, but it's not very realistically. It's not like he just saves the day. But it's something that I appreciate him bringing into the movie because, I mean, it sheds light on something that people didn't really, even really talk about back then.
Yeah.
Arnold was.
Well, I mean, it even that whole idea of divorce, I think, was very touching. And I've heard other people say that, like, you know, for kids to talk about divorce in such an open way was very revealing to them, you know, because in a lot of movies did not talk about it a lot, not that openly.
Arnold's a very smart man.
Yeah.
And he really understands his brand.
Yeah.
And he knows how to grow his brand in ways that will only make him look good.
Mm-hmm.
And even things that make him risky, he's just always been very good at how to basically develop his persona.
Right.
And that shows that. So things that might seem risky in a film end up being some of the stronger parts of it because he knows what will work best for him and his character.
Now, this might be a little bit too much to his credit, but I almost think that the idea of the John Kimble character having this, like, 15-year-old son who he doesn't get to talk to and be in as part of his life, I almost think that that was, like, he almost wrote that into the script himself. I mean, it's almost like he... You know what I'm saying? I know it kind of makes his character more vulnerable, but I mean, he talks about it in, like, a couple different scenes, and it really helps develop his, like, character, you know?
Well, and he's a family man. Like, he has sons, and he's very close with them, so I think he really mined that for that emotional depth.
Right.
But yeah, I think, again, Arnold is very underrated as a guy, as a movie star in that respect. He's up there with Tom Cruise as far as guys who really know how to manage their brand.
Yeah. Well, you know, in the movie, John Kimble says, you know, my father was a cop and my, you know, his daddy was a cop and all this kind of stuff. Yeah. But in real life, Arnold's real father was a policeman.
Really?
Yep.
That's cool.
Yeah. Also, handcuffing a witness to a corpse is against departmental regulations for every police force in the United States.
I would think so, yeah.
Yeah, that's a little bit grotesque.
Yeah, it is.
So, yeah, that's breaking some regs, like, hardcore. When Kimble first carries Phoebe into the motel, he says two short sentences in German. So, for those of you that speak German, you probably know what he says. But if you don't, like me, I had to look it up. And he says, "That makes me stinking mad. Now I'm mad." Yeah, so that's what he says in German. And then during the Kimball's, like, who is my daddy and what does he do? Questioning of the children, because I don't think you can say that line unless you say it like Arnold. So one of the Spanish-speaking girls, she says something in Spanish, but we don't know what it is. So what she actually says is, "My dad works at home and he plays with me a lot." Aww. Yeah. So Ivan Reitman's son is actually in this movie.
Okay.
What's his name? David Reitman, I think. Anyway.
Jason Reitman?
Jason Reitman, yeah.
He became a director. He's a director in India.
Yeah. Oscar nominated
director. Yeah, directed Young Adult and a bunch of really good movies. Yeah.
He's the guy making out with the girl in The Real Fire Drill.
That's Jason Reitman. I had no idea that was Jason Reitman.
Yeah. That's him. And then Ivan Reitman, apparently, like, we were talking about kids and, like, how the kids, like, you know, really did a really excellent job in this movie. Apparently, Ivan Reitman came up with the Reitman rules of filmmaking for the kids. These five, you know, rules, and which is listen, act natural, know your character, don't look at the camera, and be disciplined. So that's what he, you know, told. Apparently, there was a big casting call, you know, for, you know, the children. I think they, like, saw, like, 2,000 kids or something like that, you know, for this movie. So, I mean, they are definitely handpicked.
Well, and it had to be a nightmare to write, because you always hear, you know, don't work with kids. Kids are horrible in movies. There's so many kids in this movie.
Yeah.
And they all do a pretty great job.
Right.
So, kudos to Reitman, man. He pulled it off.
Yeah, but once again, a hit. The budget was $26 million, and the box office was $202 million.
But still a sizable hit.
Yeah. I mean, still a little bit more budget, a little bit less at the box office, but it debuted at number two the weekend that it was released, December 21st through the 25th of 1990. You know what was number one?
1990
in December.
I know 89. I know 89. I know 92. I don't know 90.
Home Alone.
Of course.
Dude, Home Alone was number one, and it debuted on November 16th, and it did not, drop to number two until mid-January. I mean, it was ridiculous. It had just, a ridiculous showing. I don't know how many weeks, but it was multiple weeks.
Yeah, it was out for a long time. It was out for so long that we got to have a fun day one day when I was in school. They took us to the movies, and we watched Home Alone.
Yeah.
And that would have been after Christmas break, so it had to be in January.
Yeah, and I mean, matter of fact, Arnold Schwarzenegger tried to get Ivan Reitman to get some of the violence out of the movie to make it a little more, friendly.
Yeah.
And, he sort of insisted, no, it's got to be in there, for the character and stuff like that. So, I mean, I give credit for Arnold. I mean, he tried. I agree, kind of on Arnold. I think it was a little more, it might not have been, so, so real and so cop-like, but it would have been, so edgy. Yeah. But I think audiences would have responded a lot better.
I enjoy the movie, but like I said, it's an oddity in the fact that it's, two movies kind of stitched together.
Right. Well, I mean, it fell to number three. So going back to going back to Kindergarten Cop, it fell to number three after the release of Godfather Part Three. So then I looked at the week after that, it dropped to number seven and then dropped to 14. Yeah. I mean, it's just
but still made $200 million, which is still impressive.
I think it made a lot more in the video because, like you said, because it had when it first came out, there was a lot about the violence in the film and the kids couldn't see it. So I think that it had a kind of a showing in the theater, but I think that on the later sales and on when it came out on video.
It got discovered on videotape by a lot of people for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right, that's where I saw it. I mean, it played a lot in my house for some reason.
Right.
Because it was on HBO a lot.
Right. And I mean, it still made a lot on opening weekend. It still debuted at number two. It still stayed in theaters, but I think that, it picked up for sure on video.
Well, what did the critics think?
Roger Ebert gave it 3 stars again, just like Twins. And he says it's made up of two farts.
Ah! You're going to might want to edit that part.
It's
We're not leaving that one in.
Oh, boy. It's made up of two parts that shouldn't fit, just like we were talking about. I'll leave it in.
You're going to leave it in?
I don't care.
You're living dangerously?
It's not a bad word. Fart's not a bad word.
It's just funny.
No, but like we were talking about, he says it's made up of two farts.
Well, now we're definitely leaving it in.
I have a cold. But, okay, back to what we were talking
about.
We're
having fun here tonight, folks.
Not a tuma.
Yeah.
It's made up of two parts that shouldn't fit. So that's why, because I'm having to say fit. And then anyway, so that's kind of this edgy and then the kindergarten part. So but he said, but somehow they do fit, meaning making a slick entertainment out of the improbable, the impossible, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, such a good writer, Ebert. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it is very sort of improbable, I would say. I mean, you can't watch these movies.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
Or Twins and think that they're actual, even close to probable. You just have to enjoy them for what they are.
They're entertaining and they're fun. And I'm glad we watched them.
Yeah, I'm glad too. Rotten Tomatoes, 51 critics and audience score, both the same.
Mm.
One of the first movies that we have reviewed where they're exactly the same.
Yeah, and I don't get what readers or what viewers, what regular people didn't like about it. To me, it's a very entertaining film.
I think at this point, though, because Kindergarten Cop is so sort of tropey and sort of meme-y and, it just becomes part of the culture. We remember it because we saw it originally, but if you go back...
A little bit of nostalgia, yeah.
But if you go back because it's been... because people may not have seen the movie at first. They just know that it exists, and then they go back, That's the only thing I think.
Yeah, you're right. We got to take off the rose-colored glasses a little bit and look at it objectively.
Yeah.
But I think they're both entertaining films. They're both flawed, but I enjoy them. So, which I guess leads us into that segment
where wait, I have one more fact.
Okay,
and this goes into like what's going to happen? Like, is there going to be more what's going to happen to the franchise? Kind of thing. In 2016, Showbiz 411 and Universal released a direct-to-DVD sequel entitled Kindergarten Cop 2 with Dolph Lundgren as Zach Reed. So it's kind of the same sort of premise, but he doesn't play John Kimball. And in 2015, which was like a year before that, Schwarzenegger stated his role as Detective John Kimball is officially retired from being a kindergarten teacher and police officer. So he basically put the rest of if he's ever going to, reprise the role. And apparently, like, Universal, since they own the rights, to, like, everything.
Yeah, wanted it, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean,
name recognition is important.
Right. I haven't seen Kindergarten Cop 2. I don't know what a terrible movie
I've actually got a copy of it because I kind of like Dolph Lundgren.
Yeah, I know you're
and Dolph I Lundgren. Haven't watched it yet. I'm going to eventually. I'm sure it's fine.
Well, at least they didn't ruin, like, John Kimball, I guess. Yeah.
At least he was in Twins 2 with Dolph Lundgren and...
And Eddie Murphy.
And Eddie Murphy or, like, Charlie Day or, like, yeah. Jim Belushi.
Jim Belushi.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
But,
All right. So, so now we get to the part of the show. Sorry. Yeah.
So, if you rented these from the video store, would you keep them an extra day or would you get them back on time?
I'd probably keep them an extra day.
I'd keep them an extra day, too. I like these movies. I own them.
Yeah.
And I will watch them again probably in about 5 years or so.
Yeah.
Once I forget them again.
Yeah, I mean, me and my friend Andy, who was on the show when we did the Fletch episode, we watched this together when we were, college roommates. And we can still yell at each other, tonight is your night, bro. And, we both get it and we both have a great time. So it's really fun. We discovered the soundboards too, like the Kindergarten Cop soundboards.
The Kindergarten Cop soundboard is an old school internet thing, kids, but go Google it. It's fun.
Yeah. It's a blast. It's really fun. I mean, we probably even did something like that, like on our college radio days. I can't even remember it along, but anyway,
it's one of the original memes, I think.
Yeah. But both fun movies. I think both of them really, like we say, show Arnold's range, and really, I think they both helped make Arnold like a really household name.
Yes, and they hold up reasonably well.
Yeah, for sure.
They don't look overly dated. They're still enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I give them a solid recommendation.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Speaking of recommendations, do you have any recommendations this week?
I'm gonna go with an easy one. I'm gonna go with Junior.
The third collaboration between Arnold and Ivan Reitman.
Yeah.
With the weirder concept out of all three, if you can imagine that.
Right.
Arnold as a man who goes through another scientific experiment.
Yep.
To try to become pregnant.
Yeah, I know.
And it's got DeVito in it.
It's got DeVito. It also stars Pamela Reed.
She is in that, yeah. It's an odd one.
Yeah, so it's the other kind of like long lost, like they all three of these movies almost kind of all go together because they're all like Ivan Reitman. Arnold movies together. Yeah.
Junior's definitely the weirder of the three. I saw that one in the theater. It's worth watching for sure because it's so kind of out there.
Right.
Like imagine Arnold being matronly and being pregnant and acting hormonal.
Yeah.
It's bizarre in a very interesting way.
Yeah.
For me, I'm going to recommend something from the more recent Arnold period.
All right.
He did a team-up movie. Uh-huh. With Sylvester Stallone called The Escape Plan.
Okay.
He's not the main character. He plays the side character.
Mm-hmm.
It's about Stallone gets put into prison, and he buddies up with another prisoner there, and the other prisoner is played by Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Okay.
And Arnold gets to be goofy. He gets to be like the character guy. He gets to be kind of like loud and boisterous and silly. Like Stallone is all serious and like kind of typical action hero quip machine. And Arnold's just having a ball. Like, he's goofing around.
Oh, yeah.
Loving getting to be the character actor.
Right.
And he's so much fun in it. Like, it's actually one of the better old man Arnold movies. So, if you haven't seen the original Escape Plan, it's better than you've heard. And I think it really shows Arnold's range as a comedian.
All right. I'll have to check that out.
It's good.
Yeah. All right. Well, All right. Well, I think that just about wraps it up. I mean, we'd love to hear from you, your favorite, you know, Arnold moments, your favorite movies, what you didn't like about these movies, because I really want to know, you know, from people like what they didn't like.
Because yeah,
like,
I've always assumed everyone liked these movies.
Yeah. They're completely watchable. They were on TV all the time. Well,
and like they wanted us to show some movies here in our day job at the office. And they wanted to have like a twin theme for some work-related function. And everyone asked us, are they like, are you going to show Twins with Danny DeVito and Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Yeah.
Like, everyone asked us, like, are you going to show them? They were excited to see it.
Yeah.
So I always, again, I always thought everyone liked them.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Rotten Tomatoes reader score on that blows my mind how low it is.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they just don't, you know, make movies like that. And, you know, Ivan Reitman... You know, wish he would, you know, make more movies like, you know.
Wish yeah, he's was, definitely, yeah, I wish he would return to those glory days.
Yeah, like Ghostbusters and Twins. And it definitely, I think, crosses a lot of genres. And Twins was one of the few movies that even my dad, like, really liked. And he didn't really like a lot of movies, you know.
These are the only movies my mom likes. So that's one reason I watched them a lot when I was a kid.
Yeah.
They were the ones I could get my mom to watch. But, you know, we love Arnold. We love Danny. We love Ivan Reitman.
Yep.
And, you know. I had fun with this one, man, and I'm looking forward to the next one. But you know what next week is, what next episode is, right? Our season finale.
Our season, we have watched 50 movies.
This 50 films, 50 man. 50
films, yes.
In 26 episodes, 50 films.
Yeah.
And next week, not next week, but next episode in 2 weeks, we're going to talk about that. We're going to have a little bit of a recap.
Yeah, we'll get to talk about what we've learned, what we've liked, what we didn't like. And maybe we'll talk about a little bit, you know, the development of the show and how it's, you know, kind of changed. And
the journey we've gone on. And we're going to have a little bit of a celebration, a little bit of back padding and attaboys, you know.
All right. So, and, you know, and also what to look forward to in season two. So
season two coming in the year 2020.
Oh, my gosh.
And almost in the year 2000.
All right. Well, have a good one, guys. I'm Ryan Acree.
And I'm Matthew Estrey. Go watch some movies, guys, and it's not a tumor.
Thanks for checking out this episode of Video Culture. You can check us out on Twitter at Video Culture 2.
That's the number 2 for two guys talking about movies like Ryan and myself.
And you can also check us out on Facebook. Just search for Video Culture Podcast.
Also, be sure to stop by our official website, video-culture.com. There we have the entire show archives, as well as articles about film.
Yeah, so check us out. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, coming out with us, talk movies. Did you like the show? Do you hate the show? Do you like or hate the movies we talked about? Let us know. Come chat with us, and let's all watch movies together.
He's a cop. In a class by himself, he is fearless, unstoppable, unbeatable.
I forgot to introduce myself. My name is John Kimball, and I love my car.
Yo, man, I'm just gonna keep an eye on it for you, all right? You see what I'm saying?
Now, he's going undercover to face his toughest adversary.
Listen, Kimball. You gotta handle this like any other police situation.
They speak their own language.
You walk into it showing fear, you're dead.
They play by their own rules.
No fear.
No fear.
And they are totally ruthless.
No fear. No fear.
Up in the morning and out for food. Teacher is teaching the golden rule.
Kindergarten cop.
American history practical man.
He's a cop. He's in a class. By himself.
Shut up!
What's the matter?
I have a headache.
It might be a tumor.
It's not a tumor. It's not a tumor at all.
The new comedy from Ivan Reitman. Arnold Schwarzenegger. Kindergarten cop.
They're horrible.